Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Bottled in China. I'm your host, Emily Steckenborn, and this is the podcast where we talk about wine, food, beer, and so much more happening from halfway around the world. Well, in this podcast, we have two amazing guests that join us to discuss online initiatives and changing wine consumer habits during COVID-19. We have Randy Illum and Maggie Curry from Kendall Jackson Winery. Founded in 1982, Kendall Jackson is one of California's most iconic wineries. Based in Sonoma County, it's recognized for making delicious wines, and most notably, Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. In fact, their Vintners Reserve Chardonnay has been the number one selling Chardonnay in America since 1992. So, how was America's favorite connecting with consumers at home during COVID-19? First, Randy Illum is the Senior VP and Chief Winemaker responsible for the entire Kendall Jackson portfolio. Better known as the Wine Master at Kendall Jackson, we discuss the importance of winemakers to connect with their consumers during quarantine. We also touch on his journey out here in Asia. We also speak with Maggie Curry, the Director of Marketing at Kendall Jackson Wines and Kendall Jackson's, about online initiatives that KJ put in place in reaction to the current crisis. All right, don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Bottled in China. You can also subscribe and follow us on iTunes and Spotify. If you love this podcast, don't forget to give it a 5 stars on iTunes and write us a review. Cheers. All right, everybody, welcome back to Bottled in China. Maggie, Randy, welcome to the episode.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's an honor to be here, to be a part of this.
I'm very excited because you guys are at home, but there's a lot to discuss because the world has changed in the last couple months, a little bit different than what we expected it to be, right?
That's for sure.
Yeah, Randy and I were just catching up and, unprecedented times. From my perspective, and I think even in looking at the business, you know, things will never be the same, but I think there's both positives and negatives. And if we're doing our best thinking to keep it glass half full and stay positive. Hopefully we'll come out of this with some new ways of approaching the wine world.
For everybody listening, can you guys tell us about Kendall Jackson Winery? I mean, it's definitely, for anybody in the wine industry, it's one of the most iconic wineries in California, and if not in America. But can you share with us the story once again for anybody who's new to the brand?
Okay, well, I'll take that. So we're a little old family-run winery owned by the Jackson family, and it started roughly 38 years ago, plus or minus one, by Jess Jackson, and he was a land-grant attorney living in San Francisco and practicing in San Francisco. It was the late 70s, the very beginning of the 80s, there was a grape glut, and with that, he lost his contract, but he was a bit stubborn and said, well, I'm not going to let my grapes hang on the vine. I'll learn how to make wine and try selling it. And realized he was also an entrepreneur and very intelligent, realized that there were different flavor domains, he called them, or flavors you would get from Chardonnay up and down the coast from these different areas. And so he had his area, and then he realized that he could get grapes and juice from, say, Monterey and Santa Barbara and make a nice blend. And so that is what he did. He practiced for a couple of years and then decided, you know, everybody liked it. Everybody in his office liked the Chardonnay that he made. And he was trying to make a wine for the people and something that was an affordable luxury. So he bottled up his first, 10,000 or so cases. And it's a pretty big tranche to just go out on a wing on. But he bottled it up, and then, you know, anybody can make wine. At the end of the day, you've got to be able to sell it. And So he took that upon himself and went off to New York and was trying to get a distributor. So in America, you know, it is the United States, but every state's like a separate country with the laws for selling wine and spirits. So he needed a distributor there, and was knocking on doors left and right. And everybody was telling him, no, they don't need another wine, especially a Chardonnay. Then it gets to the last distributor, and he says no also. And then Jess says, all right, I'll tell you what. Let me try. Let me see if I can sell, 100 cases of wine tomorrow with your worst salesperson. And if we can sell it all out that fast, then you will be my distributor. And the guy just chuckled and said, yeah, I'll take that bet any day. And then lo and behold, much to his surprise, just went out with this other person. And actually their very first account sold was the Grand Central Oyster Bar. Mm-hmm. In New York City. And to this day, they still have our wine and more. But that was the beginning of what took America by storm to where we are today. We made this wine that people loved. You didn't need to have a PhD to enjoy it. It had a long, lingering finish. It beckoned for another sip. It brought a smile to everyone. And here we are. It just grew from that to where we are today with multiple wineries up and down the coast and lots of barrels.
Yeah. I think it was a case of right place at the right time, and then a relentless commitment to keep quality at all costs, and hard work, really. It's like luck and hard work meeting and this relentless pursuit, which has really developed into like this trusted relationship with our consumers and America's favorite Chardonnay. It's been a glorious ride.
Right. And Randy, actually, just a quick question. You know, the style of Chardonnay, when you first started off, how was it different than it is today?
Well, it's an interesting question, because when it started, it was probably 60% barrel fermented, and it was 93-ish percent Chardonnay, maybe 95. The other percentage points were some varieties that have some florals to them, like Riesling or Gewürztraminer and things like that, to kind of add a little extra fun note to it. And then we changed it. I've been working here for, this will be my 27th harvest coming up, or 28th harvest, I guess, coming up. And so when I started, it was, had made it to 60%. In barrels, and Jess said, well, I proposed a blend at 90% with him. I did the 60, the 80, and the 90, and he fell in love with the 90 plus. And so we made that change, and we're running now about 93-95% barrel fermented, you know, real barrels, and we stir the lees every month there, and it's aged on the lees. So that's a big, one big change. The other was, he asked me and said, gosh, I'd like it to be 100% Chardonnay. And then my eyes got a bit wide, and I thought, oh my gosh, how are we gonna maintain this sort of nuance? Well, we have different clones, and some of the clones of Chardonnay have a floral tone. We call them the Ruud clone or the Z clone, that are like Viognier almost. But they are Chardonnay. So that was how we got around that part. So that's changed. And then, of course, over the years, in the very beginning, we were buying a lot of grapes from other people, and we were having our grapes processed at other wineries. It's all well and good, but the best job you'll ever do is if you grow your own grapes and then process them, ferment them, and age them in your own winery. And so that's where we are now. We ferment everything. 100% of the wine is fermented by our team and our wineries. Probably 85% of the grapes are from our very own vineyards. So those are some huge changes. And then the quality ramps up as you're doing this. And when we're making our Chardonnay, we have, you know, in any given vineyard, you have a lot of different blocks. And the different blocks will have different row orientations, different elevations, different aspects, different trellises, different rootstocks, different clones of the Chardonnay, different soils, hither and heather. So we keep all these blocks separate, trying to learn and enhance the wine at the end of the day every year. And so if there's a block that's not really doing so hot, well, then we'll figure out how to make it better or get rid of it and fix it. So I think that's a whole wide spectrum of how we've changed things, all for the better, and slight, all done in slight nuances, so nobody was surprised.
Now, one of the things as well that I just want to ask one quick question as well to you, Randy, is I feel like the last maybe 5-10 years, KJ really has invested in Pinot. I was just at the MW tasting that you guys ran in Napa at the CIA, and you guys were doing so many different trials with Pinot. When you first started off, you were definitely known for your Chardonnays. Would you say that today you're still mainly known for your Chardonnay, or are you starting to be known for your Pinot?
I would say for Pinot too, we consider ourselves to be a Burgundian house, basically, even though we make everything. Mm-hmm. But Chardonnay number one, Pinot number two, and on from there. But we've made a huge investment in Pinot and in the vineyards and in the clones and in the methodology for fermenting Pinot. The best Pinots are fermented in open top, small open top fermenters. And so we have, again, you know, these range of wineries from Santa Barbara to Monterey to Sonoma, Carneros, Napa, Mendocino County, the Anderson Valley up there. And they all give different nuances, and each area can produce a spectacular wine by itself. And then, of course, our Vintners Reserve is a blend of all. So yes, we are big on Pinot.
Well, that's exciting. And I think a lot of people are definitely quite excited about Pinot as well, because it does offer so many variants within regions, as you were mentioning. Now, Maggie, I want to talk about what's going on right now with COVID-19, because, you know, I really do believe that within all this chaos, KJ will continue to make delicious wine. But how is marketing, how has that changed in regards to what's going on in today's market?
From the marketing side of things, we are closely paying attention and being sensitive to where our consumers are. So probably like the rest of the world, we're seeing sales within restaurants, hotels, airlines, really fall off the cliff, if you will. But luckily, Kendall Jackson specifically has a very strong foothold in grocery, where people, it's still an essential kind of service here in the U.S., and all of our grocery stores are still open and operating. Consumers are taking many less trips, but when they do purchase, let's say once a week, wine seems to be an important component to their purchase. Which in an interesting way kind of warms, I think, our hearts here, Randy's heart, my heart, on the Kendall Jackson team. And knowing that, I think, you know, as all these people are homeschooling their children at home or working from home or not working from home, they're definitely, you know, making sure to honor, you know, isolation in place. But oftentimes they're with family and friends at their dinner table, and hopefully there's a bottle of wine, you know, helping to bring a little bit of me time and a little bit of an attainable luxury moment for people. So we've shifted our channel strategy. We, you know, for example, in grocery stores, they don't want people lingering, so they want you in and out. And so we took our efforts that would have gone to point of sale, where we would have, you know, touted a 90-point score, or, you know, had some messaging on a bottle necker or a case card. We really shifted that to digital strategy, you know, with companies such as Instacart and Drizzly. So making sure we're still reaching our consumers, but, you know, paying attention to where they are and adjusting our messaging. You know, I don't know if you were like me when this first started, it felt like all advertising seemed to be from a different time, because if it was groups of people gathered together, right, it just felt like so off and odd. So we had to quickly adjust, and that's where you'll see we moved, you know, to virtual. So Randy has been such a good sport in participating in a once weekly virtual wine tasting, where we have a little bit of a following where people are ordering the wines, you know, the week before, and then tasting along with Randy on Sunday afternoons. He also did a really cool Zoom platform virtual tasting with wine.com with our chef, actually. So our chef, Justin Wangler, was at our wine estate and gardens in our culinary kitchen. And then Randy was at home, and it was moderated by Gwendolyn, who works for wine.com. And Randy, how was that experience?
Well, that was great. You know, there were actually over a thousand people that signed in to watch. And I think roughly half had signed up well in advance, because they made an offer where, you know, if you sign in and if you want, you can have the three wines sent to you so you could open them up and taste through them while we were talking. So I thought it was a great success.
Yeah. You know, everybody's learning how to adapt. And I keep saying this, you know, once we get to the other side of this, you know, there's going to be ways of reaching our consumers that we probably never would have brought forward had it not been for COVID-19. So though this is a heavy, heavy time in the world, I think we might come out of this with a more robust and well-rounded way of interacting with the Kendall Jackson wine fans of the world.
Certainly. And Randy, how is that and how important is it, you think, right now for winemakers to engage with online e-based programs like you did with Zoom or different initiatives?
Well, I think it's critically important. It's like you better be doing it or prepare to die. It's you know, especially if you're more restaurant focused with your wines, but regardless of how you're selling your wines, being able to, you know, get face to face with the consumer and the purchaser is imminently important. And this is the new chapter.
Right. And discussing new chapters, actually, Maggie, you know, when this was all coming about, what are some programs that were already in place and that you just rolled out throughout COVID? And what are some programs that you had to create and had to be pushed out quickly because of the situation that we're in today?
We had to pivot on some of our consumer advertising initiatives, like point of sale in stores. And also we were going to be running some out-of-home advertising in New York and Chicago in the month of May. So we were able to postpone that out further. But, you know, a lot of it just came to us getting together quite quickly and looking at, with the rise of e-commerce and home delivery with wine, we made sure we were shifting our strategy to move away from, you know, things that we had to shut down because of COVID, but then like finding consumers where they were growing. I think I heard, you know, Drizzly, which does wine delivery from independent liquor stores across the U.S. to homes, they were up 500%. So making sure we were aware of the trends. And again, putting these virtual interactions out, you know, we had the tastings with Randy, we had the virtual Zoom with wine.com. We have a virtual cooking class going on through the Zoom platform with our wine club members. We created some virtual backgrounds that are kind of fun for people that are wine fans of Kendall Jackson. We also released some adult coloring sheets that you can do, you know, just really trying to think, what are people doing, you know, as they live and adapt during COVID-19 and, you know, trying to bring them things of value.
Mm-hmm. And Randy, I want to go back to you and discuss that as well. Can you tell us about your point of view on what are programs that you wish to continue to develop as a winemaker to help people during this moment?
Well, I think that doing some like a Zoom tasting of sorts, you know, with where they can see what you're doing and you can talk and maybe, you know, with a little, with more interaction and longer, we've been pretty much doing everything, you know, like the Sunday afternoons or I think 5 minutes or 6 minutes. Mm-hmm. Wine.com was a half hour. I was talking with a friend last night about, actually this was a spirits one. I said, well, how long were you guys doing that? And it was just four classes. He said, well, an hour and a half, and there were only 24 people. So I think that we will be doing more of it. It's what we normally do when we go out into the marketplace, but since we can't really go out into the marketplace, we can do it, you know, on screen, you know, effectively live, but we can do like all the Pinots up and down the coast and go through and taste every one. And,
right.
And then you can pause and people can ask a question if mm-hmm. they want. And the other interesting thing that what you and Maggie were chatting about was, you know, the delivery system. What's been really nice is, especially in California, is the government's gotten a little leaner on their rules. And so, you know, restaurants can deliver and sell wine or deliver wine unopened. That used to be against the law. And you can now have wine delivered to your house. You don't have to be there to sign for it. So everybody's embracing how to make business better and easier. year. And right. I just look forward to more of these sort of one on 24 tastings with folks.
Certainly. And I felt like this was sometimes even a wake-up call for everybody in the industry because, you know, wine is so traditional and I felt like everybody was really scared to go online and embrace media and embrace live streams. And this has pushed us to face it and move quickly and really change a lot of the programs we had in mind and what we thought was were great tactics. But somehow this seems to really work. And as you've mentioned, Randy, 1,000 people on Zoom, it's almost like doing a virtual, it's almost like coming to the winery and being able to see you, and you could never accommodate 1,000 at one time. So this really allows you to really engage with customers. Randy, another quick question is, you know, what tips could you share with winemakers on how to keep your live stream or the program interesting and not too scientific? Because I find that a big issue with a lot of winemakers. So how do you make it interesting and okay for anybody at any level to join and understand what you're talking about?
Well, I think, you know, when we first started doing the 5-minute clips, it was from my house, and most all of them are from my house, because we are sheltering in place, even though we are an essential business and have the ability to, you know, go out to the wineries and the vineyards and things like that. But when we were first starting it, you know, they asked for all different kinds of backgrounds. And so, you know, in the beginning it was, okay, there you're sitting there with your, you know, 3 bottles and 3 glasses against a, you know, a very dull backdrop. And then I said, oh, you can do this anywhere. You know, so then I started sitting in the living room, and then in sort of another room with, you know, all kinds of stuff in the background. So people really are feeling like, oh, you really are just sitting at home, and it's not a sterile spot. Or I did one with, you know, s'mores. That's where you toast a marshmallow lightly and then put some chocolate and a graham cracker together to make this little dessert. Well, I did a s'more in my fireplace. Didn't do it very well, but still it was nice.
That was my favorite one.
So you have to not be sterile. It would be my suggestion. And definitely don't get too geeky and out there on this chemistries and specifics. Remember your audience. You know, they're not other winemakers or what have you, or wine writers. They're, you know, the men and women in the cul-de-sacs or at home that really don't care about pH. They just want to know a little bit more about the wine and how they can enjoy it and maybe learn a few more things about it. And to have a smile and be somewhat engaging, you know, and not boring, if that helps.
And that begs to ask me, what wine did you pair with s'mores?
Pinot.
Okay. I was wondering, I was like, wait a second, how are you doing this? So was it just one s'mores with 4 different Pinots and how they all go great together?
Yeah.
So that's the universal pairing that I've obviously missed. Being in China, I haven't done that for ages. And now I'm thinking that's probably better than salmon. I think you're onto something.
You should try.
Perfect. Now, Maggie, I want to talk a little bit, as we've mentioned, different types of consumers. And right now, are you seeing a shift in the demographics of wine consumers?
So primarily what's really interesting, and Kendall Jackson does seem to be benefiting from this, that with COVID and sort of, you know, less grocery trips and, you know, just being quite cautious out there, there's a flee to safety and trusted brands. And this is across all categories. And so, you know, in this moment, I think being considered America's favorite, often within the wine community and people that love to drink wine, we're seeing this laser focus on maybe like the top 10 blue chip brands when it comes to wine. And Kendall Jackson's lucky to be a part of that group. Because I think what you were seeing before across all consumers and all segments, we were at a height within the wine world of, I call them Kathy cul-de-sac of the U.S., being adventurous and really, you know, dabbling in a bunch of different wines and not being afraid to try new brands, not being afraid to try imports and varietals. And that's all come to a halt during COVID. So we're seeing sort of this laser focus and attention paid to just the trusted blue chip brands of the U.S.
Interesting. I guess it's so interesting how also the psychology of everybody going through this is impacting their wine purchasing. So it's almost like they're looking for what they know in security, right, at this moment. Really yeah. Fascinating.
Yeah, wow. It's on the consumer side, but it's also on the wine buyer side. So if you're a wine sales rep, right now you're being told only show me, you know, the top 10 or the top 15, then those are the ones I will display. I don't want to hear about anything new. I don't want to hear about, you know, this small production, this or that. Like really there's this sort of focus right now as we try to just keep things on target, I think. And so it's both on the consumer side, but also the gatekeeper side.
And if I could also just add that, you know, it is a comfortable wine, a comfort wine that we have and represent. And that is because it's consistently good and consistent year in and year out because of the fact that, you know, we have a lot of the same people, you know, working for us. We have the same vineyards, the same, you know, regions. And so people know that what they're going to get and that they're going to like it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
No question.
Right. More conservative as well in their choices. We've seen that as well here in China where people are spending less, but when they spend on something they know, right? So it's about making more conservative choices because you're quite uncertain about what's going on in the future and people want to make the right choice.
Exactly.
Now, you know, talking about Randy, you being in the vineyards all the time, and this is almost impossible now for people to come over to the winery and go visit you and go experience everything. Maggie and Randy, what about VR and AR? Do you think that this might make a comeback given that everybody is in quarantine?
What's VR and AR?
So this is a no.
I'll take this one. Okay. Virtual reality and augmented reality. I think that could, you know, it's been a rapid, steep learning curve when it comes to, I think wine has often been behind the times when it comes to technology. And you're seeing everybody rapidly adapt. And some of it's going to be painful because it's so quick. But, you know, like I said earlier when we were talking, I think a lot of us will come out of this with a better way of reaching the consumer and interacting. And you better believe that AR and VR might have a spike. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the wine country and the wineries and the vineyards, it is a really romantic endeavor. And I think, you know, the more we can storytell visually, the better.
Right. Wow. Randy, we're going to get you on that one day though. We're going to show you VR and AR.
Okay. Well, I'm just thinking maybe I'll have a little camera on my front of my shirt as I'm wandering through the vineyard. So I can point at
just walk around with you. Yeah. That's actually not a bad idea too. Like a GoPro, right? That's what it is.
Kinda,
Try it on your head. Yeah.
look at that grape cluster, or it's in bloom right now. You could see it, couldn't smell it, but that'd be better than nothing.
Yeah. Certainly. And Randy's always game for whatever we ask him to do. So we're so lucky to have him on our part of the Kendall Jackson family.
Yeah, it's all fun. It's all great.
And I want to talk a little bit about China. So Randy, you came over to China a while ago. Can you tell us your experience about bringing KJ here to China and sharing that with everybody here?
When we were showcasing our Kendall Jackson wines there's tremendous reception for our wines. And Summergate is a great group. And they've been there, I think, 20 some odd years, 25 years maybe. But and they're well versed in what they do. But there was a tremendous reception for our wines of all pricing tiers. So it was, I can't wait to come back.
That's perfect. And you know, was there any dish that you thought paired exceptionally well with one of your wines?
Oh,
there must be a lot. But any dish that you remember?
Well, I went to this one restaurant in the back room when the doors closed and you push the button to have somebody come in, and had all of these unique dishes, you know, traditional dishes of China. And I think it was with, can't remember if it was with Chardonnay or with Pinot, but there was these little feet. They were like little feet.
Oh, they're chicken feet.
Yeah, but little tiny ones, right?
Oh, I've been here for almost nine years. I've never eaten chicken feet. So you are one strong person.
Well, that stuck in my mind. Yeah. I mean, and the little duck tongues, those are good.
Oh my gosh. Wow. I can't believe they took you to eat all that stuff. Amazing.
Yeah. Well, it was to, you know, get a feel for what really goes on. And it was a wonderful afternoon.
Oh, fantastic.
It was great.
And Maggie, my final question for this episode is, from everything going on, what are some lessons that you've learned and that you'd like to share with the wine community?
I think we're all going to get through this, that wine is an ancient beverage. We like to say that, you know, it forges bonds with people, and people, you know, share it with their loved ones. So I think we'll all get through this. And I encourage everybody to look at this glass half full, like I said earlier, in that though it's a rapid adaptation and we're all finding ways to make sure we're still interacting virtually, I think we're going to come out of this stronger, and that wine will be stronger as a result. And I think the main thing is Randy and I both just can't wait for the day that we can all get back together and cheers with a glass of wine and reopen our doors. And so I think we're just trying to stay like with an entrepreneurial spirit and look at things glass half full.
Very well said. Thank you so much, Maggie and Randy, for your time. It's such a great conversation about what's going on and how everybody is pioneering through it.
Yeah, thanks so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you. And best wishes to you and everyone.
Yep, stay well.
Thank you.
And stay safe.